Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some fascinating guests on. In the first half, we're going to talk to Catherine Nicolay, and she is the author of Nothing Much Happens. And in the second half, we're going to talk to Dawn Demure, Herbalism for Healing. But first, here's Alan with the Health First News.
Older adults who aren't interested or enthusiastic about their usual activities may have a higher risk of developing dementia, new research suggests. The 9-year study of more than 2,000 older adults with an average age of 74 found that people with severe apathy, a lack of interest or concern, were 80% more likely to develop dementia during the study period than those with low apathy. Study lead author Dr. Meredith Bach said apathy is not subtle. It's something that families can pick up on. More research is needed, but this is another potential red flag symptom of the prodromal early phase of dementia. She's a clinical fellow in neurology at the University of California San Francisco Institute for Neurosciences. The new study findings were published online October 14th in Neurology. Respiratory viruses tend to be seasonal, including the two most common flu viruses, but the coronavirus that causes COVID-19 seems to be a year-round nuisance, according to a new study published in the journal Nature. Environmental factors such as humidity and temperature don't appear to affect the coronavirus as much as other viruses, which flourish more in the dry, cold months of winter. Mauricio Santillana, one of the study authors and epidemiologist at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, told Yahoo Life coronavirus transmission still happened in warm and humid places as seen in the U.S. during the past summer months. Based on the spatial patterns of COVID-19, the transmission doesn't seem to be affected by temperature, humidity, or human movements alone. Younger women who suffer a heart attack are more likely than men to die in the decade after surgery, a new study finds. It included more than 400 women and nearly 1,700 men with an average age of 45 who had a first heart attack between 2000 and 2016. During an average follow-up of more than 11 years, there were no statistically significant differences between men and women for deaths while in the hospital or for heart-related deaths. However, women had a 1.6-fold increased risk of dying from other causes during the follow-up, according to the study published October 14th in the European Heart Journal. Offering fresh insight into the deep-seated roots of dementia, new research finds that diminished blood flow to the brain is tied to the buildup of a protein long associated with Alzheimer's disease. Study author Judy Paugh explained, called tau, high levels of the protein are one of the hallmark pathologies that define Alzheimer's disease in the brain. She is an associate professor of neurology with the Mark and Mary Stevens Neuroimaging and Informatics Institute and the Alzheimer's Disease Research Center at the University of Southern California. Tau tangles very closely track Alzheimer's disease progression, such that when the number of tau tangles in the brain increases, problems in memory and thinking will also increase, she noted. The findings were published October 12th in the Journal of Neuroscience.
We have Catherine Nicolay with us today, and she is the creator of a really successful podcast, Nothing Much Happens. She also is the writer of the book, Nothing Much Happens, as well as being a yoga and meditation teacher. So welcome, Catherine.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's lovely to have you on today. The book is beautiful. I just received it last week, and the title, you'd think, where are we going to go with this? How did you come about to where you realized we needed just nothing much to happen in order to be well?
Well, using sort of simple narratives in which there isn't much of a plot, but there are a lot of details, that's the way that I've trained myself to fall asleep since I was a little girl. And because I have trained myself over these years, I can fall asleep quickly and I can go back to sleep if I wake in the middle of the night. And so I'd already had sort of this technique that I honed inside my own mind. But I think it's particularly relevant right now when you consider the amount of media that we consume every day, how overstimulated we can be by the time we get to bed at night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when you go to reach for a book that you might like to read before you go to sleep, sometimes they're so exciting or active or upsetting that when you turn the light off, there's no soft place to rest your mind. So that's what my book is meant to be.
So, I mean, we're doing the exact opposite if we're listening to the news maybe three times a day or watching things that are hard to take, that they keep reviewing in our minds.
Yeah, I mean, I was just thinking today, you know, if you considered like the life of a one of your ancestors who lived maybe 150 years ago, maybe on a farm or something, you've today seen more images than they might have seen in their lifetime. And our brains have not really had a chance to catch up with that sheer volume of meditation or information. And so much of it is upsetting, and especially in the year 2020. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that when people lay down at night and they find their mind just spinning and spiraling and catastrophizing, it's no surprise. And, you know, that's why we really do need sort of this bridge to get us to a more relaxed place.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about our thoughts and I guess how to come outside them, or how to just let them be.
That's a good way to put it, because I think there's often there's this idea that we're meant to stop our thoughts, that that's what meditation is. And a lot of times when people try to meditate and they realize they can suddenly be more aware of their thoughts, and my goodness, there are a lot of them, and my goodness, there's no way to train them, or there doesn't seem to be a way to control them, they feel like they've failed at meditating, and they say, I can't meditate. But that's unfortunately just was a miscommunication between the teacher and the student, that we're not trying to stop our thoughts. But we can choose not to engage so intensely with them. We can shift our awareness. So when we do something like mindfulness meditation, we're shifting our attention. They might continue. They might sort of roll in the background. But we're going to pay attention to the sensory information of the moment. How does my body feel? What is my breath like as it moves over my upper lip? Those bits of information. And the stories really sort of help you do the same thing through storytelling. A lot of times we know maybe some things about meditation and we feel like we should be doing it kind of like flossing. We know we're supposed to be flossing, but it's not, it feels like a chore sometimes, and we just can't compel ourselves to do it. But there's something just truly pleasurable about stories. Mm-hmm. So I find that it's a way to practice mindfulness and to train our brains for meditation through something as pleasurable as reading a story.
Wow. And so you're a meditation teacher, but you're making this available, these ideas available to everyone in every walk of life, whether they think they're going to, you know, sit in a quiet spot and really, you know, give it for 10 minutes or something.
Yeah, that sort of formal idea of meditation that it has to be, you know, seated on a cushion, cross-legged in the quiet, I think is, you know, for some people that's meditation works for them and it's great. But mindfulness just means paying attention in a calm way, and that's for everybody. And I think right now we're so easy to feel disconnected and frazzled, which is a pretty rocky combination. Mm-hmm. It's really useful to be able to be on the other side of the spectrum and say, no, I feel I'm paying attention to what's happening, but I'm calm.
Mm-hmm. So there's a part of this is checking in with all parts of your body to see how your body's reacting to the day or the story or the adjective.
Well, I mean, I think that's true for, you know, if I was teaching mindfulness, the mm-hmm. stories themselves don't necessarily have you checking in with all parts of your body, but they do have a lot of sensory information in them. So, you know, if the story is about, you know, a walk on a day like today, I'm in Michigan right now, and the leaves are turning and the air smells fantastic and that wonderful spicy, crispy smell. So I would probably have all those parts, those details as part of the story. So it's not quite as internalized as sort of a meditation would be, but you're going to be in your senses thinking about how things smell, how they look, how they sound.
Mm-hmm. And that's a new neuroscience of what's actually going on in our brain, isn't it? Mm-hmm. That the thought processes have a chemical reaction to how we're going to feel.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, we have sort of this early warning system, kind of our own spidey sense, and that's just interoception, our awareness of the bodily sensations. And once you start to recognize that every emotion and every thought has a corresponding physical sensation, you get sort of this early warning system, and you start to be able to see yourself with a little bit more space and perspective. You see when anxiety is rising, you see when a temper might be rising, and you can start to make choices instead of just knee-jerk reactions.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what we should do when we feel our shoulders come up or our throats constrict or by the thoughts and things that we have to, you know, get through in 2020. What's a way we can back that up?
A really useful, like, quick step into mindfulness to me is to look in that moment when you notice I'm tensing up, I'm getting agitated. Notice three colors in the room. Take a second, really look. And then notice a sound in the room. It's probably been playing in the background, even if it's the sound of the furnace or some vibration. And then notice if you're breathing in or breathing out. All of those simple steps, they just take a second, but they ground you back in the present and they put you back in your body. A lot of times when we feel agitated, our mind is sort of spiraling into what ifs, into possible futures, into these worries. And while all that stuff, especially in 2020, I'm not going to tell anybody it's not legitimate to be anxious, but it's not happening right now. Right now, what's happening? Be with that, because then you can make a better choice about what will come next. But when you're wrapped up in the what if, it's really hard to make a reasoned decision.
Mm-hmm. So, Catherine, you've been at this a very long time. You were actually able to self-soothe yourself as a young girl to create stories, to create release. How did that work its way into who you are and what you do today?
Well, I grew up in Flint, Michigan, and Flint, Michigan today is known for the fact that our city's water has been poisoned with lead and is still to this day poisoned and unsafe. But it wasn't an easy place to live even in the 80s. And it was a place, you know, where I'm quite proud to be from Flint. I think people from Flint are doers and dreamers, and we make things better for the world because that's the world we grew up in. But it was a problematic place to live. There was a lot of violence. And I think that probably I turned this as a very young child, 4 or 5 years old, because I needed it. I needed to feel safe in order to fall asleep because I didn't live someplace that was very safe. Mm-hmm. So I think I adapted this behavior. Mm-hmm. And because I found a way to, and I was also a child with a very large imagination, so the idea that I could close my eyes, make myself someplace else, was irresistible to me. I wanted to be able to do it as much as I could. Mm-hmm. So I feel like those things kind of came together, being a creative person, being somebody who has a natural tendency to try to teach. I think once you're a teacher, if you have something in you, you just can't stop teaching it to other people.
Right, yeah.
So I had this tool at my fingertips to fall asleep, and I would hear my yoga students, my friends and family say, gosh, I can't sleep. I haven't had a good night's sleep in a week. And I kept thinking, I know how to do this. How do I get it from my brain into yours? And that was how I came up with the idea for the podcast. And I'm so glad now that it is also a book.
Yes, that's amazing. And the podcast, I found you through Spotify on the podcasts. It was a delight to listen. We're going to go over to a quick break. And when we come back, what I'd like you to do is maybe take us through the meta meditation that's in your book. Would that be okay?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back. Okay.